You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an emergency episode of Slash Film Daily. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Soretta, and joining me on today's podcast is a Star Wars expert. He writes for SlashFilm.com, Sci-Fi, StarWars.com, and he runs the Full of Sith podcast. Of course, I'm talking about Brian Young.
Thanks for thinking of me to come talk to you about this.
You were the first person I wanted to have on this podcast because I know you, if you've ever heard Brian on the podcast in the past or have read his articles on the site, he has an extensive knowledge of Star Wars that is, I think, unmatched by anybody maybe lesser than like Pablo Hidalgo. So, Let's jump into this. Let's talk about what the news is. Jon Favreau posted on his Instagram account the following image, which is an image that is almost set up like an opening Star Wars crawl, but it's not in forced perspective. And it says, "The Mandalorian. After the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travels of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic." Okay, so this basically confirms the rumor that the Star Wars TV series that is going to debut on the Disney streaming service is called The Mandalorian, and this is the plot synopsis. So I guess, first of all, Brian, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, Mandalorians have never been my favorite part of Star Wars lore, but thanks to Clone Wars and Rebels, they've really fleshed them out as a culture that's really interesting, and it makes a lot of sense now thinking about Jon Favreau helming this project, since he was the leader of Death Watch on Clone Wars with the character Pre Vizsla, who was a Mandalorian. So, I think that's really interesting. The other thing that I feel like I'm going to point out for the next couple of years until the show is over, though, is that, or at least until the show starts, is that according to Prime Minister Almec from Mandalore, Jango Fett and Boba Fett are not actually Mandalorians. They've just, you know, they've got some stolen valor issues going on with the armor.
Huh.
And so I'm interested to see how that affects things, if it does at all. And I wonder how much this is going to touch on that sort of clan-based system that they have with their families and their clans that they set up on Clone Wars and Rebels, because it is set so far out in the unknown reaches during a time after the strife supposedly on Mandalore is finished. And it makes me wonder if part of the reason Clone Wars is getting its next season on the Disney streaming service is to help dovetail into the show, because the last thing we're going to see, presumably, is the Siege of Mandalore, which has been sort of well-storied for years now. And seeing the political situation on Mandalore resolve at the height of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, for sure. And just quickly, my reaction is I'm super excited for this. This honestly sounds like the Boba Fett movie that Josh Trank was kind of attached to, you know, years ago. I had heard it was kind of like the sci-fi western, like you hear this, you know, lone gunfighter in outer space. It makes me almost wonder if Boba Fett might be involved in this in some way. I know we heard that his armor had been sold or something in one of the books, right?
Yeah, so in the Aftermath books, there's no indication in the new canon that Boba Fett has survived post Return of the Jedi, and his armor was sold to a lawman who is sort of a lone gunslinger on his own named Cobb Vanth on Tatooine by Jawas shortly after, within a year after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And
So maybe he is, but maybe he's still dead.
Yeah, I know Pablo said at one of the panels that Boba Fett is in the pit until something comes out that says that he got out of the pit. So
yeah,
So
he's Schrodinger's non-Mando.
Yeah, but it is interesting that, you know, we had heard that James Mangold was developing a Boba Fett movie, you know, before the box office failure of Solo, a Star Wars Story, and I know they're reevaluating what they're doing with those standalone movies. But let's get back to this. Let's talk about the history of the Mandalorian people in the Star Wars universe. You know, maybe not the legends, but what we actually know in canon.
In canon, it's really interesting where Mandalore is sort of it's got a split identity, where half of the society is a very pacifist society, and there's this warrior culture sort of underlining all that pacifism, where the ultimate goal of the warriors was to declare peace. And so when peace was declared, some of the warriors left and sort of said, you know, this is not the Mando way. And that was Death Watch, run by Jon Favreau's character Pre Vizsla, and he worked with Maul during Maul's resurgence during the Clone Wars to take back control of Mandalore away from those pacifists. And Death Watch and Maul sort of kept control of Mandalore through the Clone Wars. We're going to see exactly how the Republic took over Mandalore at the end of the Clone Wars in this new season of Clone Wars. And then the Empire takes over. So in Rebels, we learn a lot about how the Empire puts an Imperial Academy there and how they subjugate the planet in ways that maybe we don't necessarily like. They develop weapons specifically to target Mandalorians, and their armor, which is still special and hundreds of years old. That was something that was really interesting, and that Mandos passed their armor down generation to generation, and they just sort of personalize it per generation. And while Sabine Wren, who is a character on Rebels, was in the Imperial Academy, she helped the Empire develop a weapon to specifically target that legacy armor. And it seems as though they're freed by the time of the end of the Galactic Civil War, and Mandalore sort of falls off the map at that point. But the way it's set up is it has these clans and families, so it has this very much
it's very Game of Thrones. Yeah.
So there's a lot of intergalactic politics between each clan, where some clans are more interested in serving the Empire with people like Gar Saxon, or some of them are more neutral or want more of that peace, like House Wren that Sabine clings to, or Clan Vizsla, where Jon Favreau's character, Pre Vizsla, was part of, but also Katee Sackhoff's character, Bo-Katan. And I'd be very interested at this point. It seems like she's survived all the way through the Galactic Civil War. It would not surprise me at all if she showed up on the show, if it does deal with more Mandalorians than just this one lone gunslinger, if she reprised her role and actually brought that character to live action.
That would be cool. I'm also wondering, like, you know, this is set between the events of Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, so it's set between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. This seems like this is the, it almost seems like this is what they're going for going forward, kind of like we saw, you know, with the old expanded universe. There's a lot of, you know, stories told between what, New Hope and Empire. Am I getting that
yeah.
right? Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of that in the comics. That's where the comics kind of live right now. But yeah, I think we are going to get a lot of storytelling between episode 6 and episode 7. And they've got a lot to fill in, but you can still kind of tell it feels like they're still staying away from any of the A stories during that time because they're still waiting for episode 9 to finish. You know, because that could change anything. So it makes sense that this is out in the unknown regions and it can't affect galactic politics much, because who knows what JJ might change as he evolves episode 9.
It's all connected, but it really isn't. I did get some reaction on Twitter from people that were kind of disappointed by the synopsis because of what you just said, because of that kind of ending that this takes place, you know, in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far away from the authority of the New Republic, which basically kind of insinuates that it's really not going to connect with, you know, the movies that we're getting right now.
Well, but you do have, after the Battle of Jakku, which takes place about a year after Return of the Jedi, you have the First Order, the remnants of the Empire that goes to become the First Order, heads to those same unknown reaches. And they sort of have all the bank accounts of Palpatine's, and they have all of the leftover resources of the Empire. And like we learned in Last Jedi from Rose Tico's system, the Hayes Minor and Hayes Major in the Automox system, they are subjugated pretty quickly by the First Order as they build up. So whatever that Imperial remnant is, whatever the First Order is in its infancy, they're still out there operating in those same areas. So we could get some of that connection, but on the First Order side, not with our heroes in the New Republic.
I remember I got a chance to sit down with Kathleen Kennedy for Force Awakens. That's the last time I got to speak to her in public. But I did ask her about Star Wars 1313, which is this video game that was going to be kind of set in the Star Wars underworld and kind of follow a Mandalorian who might have ended up being Boba Fett, right? Is that to be?
I think that was a rumor of how the game was going to go. But George Lucas had been developing 1313, and it had 1313 is an interesting. We could do a whole show on 1313 and Star Wars Underworld, the scripts that George Lucas developed with Ronald Moore.
Yeah, yeah.
I
want to see a book on that at some point.
Me too. Well, I think they're still mining material from it. You know, we got Sheev Palpatine's first name out of all of the work they did on that. So it's still being mined for material as they go forward. So I don't think we'll get a book on it until they've drained those mines of all the gold they might contain. But as far as 1313, a lot of those ideas actually got incorporated into Clone Wars. If you look at the episodes with Ahsoka on the run from the Jedi Order, she's actually hanging out on levels 1312 and 1314, and Asajj Ventress is there. So I'm not sure. And Boba Fett in that era for 1313 would have been Boba Fett at that time, right?
Yeah.
So I guess Boba Fett, if you ask George Lucas, Boba Fett was always Boba Fett from the moment he was cloned.
Yeah, well, George Lucas is no longer involved, so we don't know what they're going to do.
It's fascinating watching, reading all of the art of books to see just how much they have, how closely they have hewed to his blueprint, though.
Yeah, no, for sure. But anyways, back to Kathleen Kennedy. I did ask her about 1313 back then, and she said that I'm going to quote her, interestingly enough, that's an area we spent a lot of time reading through the material that he developed. It's something very much would like to explore, and that was 1313 the game, where there was, and then she said, our attitude is we don't want to throw any of that stuff away. It's gold. It's something we're spending a lot of time looking at, pouring through, discussing, and we may very well develop those things further. We definitely want to. So I'm wondering if this could be an offshoot of some of that stuff.
Well, but 1313 was very specifically located on that level of Coruscant.
For sure.
And this is the Unknown Reaches. So maybe this is, you know, Coruscant Junior if they pull some of that. I think where we might see them pulling from that material is that is the actual factions of the underworld that might be running in these unknown parts of the galaxy too, whether that's how the Hutt clan operates or other parts of the underworld apparatus, how bounty hunters operate based on that game or the TV show that was developed concurrently with it or whatever.
Have you been keeping an eye out? Like, the production has begun on the show or is starting to begin. There's like huge, massive sets that have been constructed in Southern California, which is actually kind of exciting to me because I just assumed this whole thing was going to be on stages with green or blue screen or whatever. And, you know, there's these marketplace sets. Have you looked at any of those photos or video or anything?
You know, I haven't yet, but I know most of that's Jason Ward over at Making Star Wars. And I know... I know he's excited about it. It sounds like, but I haven't taken the dive into it myself. I try to go into these movies clean, but that doesn't mean I don't.
You must see hear stuff like so that. Much stuff, so I can't imagine.
Oh,
that.
It's I do.
Yeah. Okay. Any last thoughts of what you might hope that this show could be?
You know, I. Based on the very brief description we've got, I hope it's just a cool Western. You know, I really hope that one of the really fascinating things about this era of Star Wars where you've got Rogue One, that's very much a war movie, and you've got Solo, which is very much a Star Wars-based heist movie, but that's a Western. I hope that Favreau and the directors he has lined up to do this show really give us they capture a spirit of that sort of thing and really lean into the cinematic influence that brought them to this story.
Yeah.
And give us something a little different with that flavor to it.
I hate to bring this up, but obviously Favreau is a fan of Westerns and he made that Cowboys vs. Aliens movie a bunch of years back. A handful of years back, and that I think leaned more towards Western than sci-fi. I wonder if you're right, and I wonder if this is going to be the more sci-fi version of that. Not in that bad way, because I don't think that movie was well received. But I'm interested to see what Favreau does here. He I had heard way back in the day when they were first eking out. When J.J. was developing Force Awakens, I heard Jon Favreau met with Kathleen Kennedy back then, and he's a big fan of Star Wars. I remember I was on the set of Jungle Book, And on the sound stages in downtown Los Angeles, they had blue screens all over. And I asked Favreau, I'm like, why are you using blue screens instead of green screens? He's like, you know what? It's not any technical reason. He just remembered, like, he grew up on all those Star Wars behind the scenes photos, and it was all blue screens back then. So he wanted to, you know, make a movie where they had blue screens.
It's funny they changed that. Like, they started using green screens on Star Wars sets because of R2.
Oh,
because if you notice in the not in the special editions, but in the original editions, every shot of R2 on a blue screen, all of his paint is painted black instead of blue because it just faded into the background. And that was why they sort of changed the color for Star Wars movies, because they were losing R2's detail.
See, that is a cool bit of trivia there. So green screens because of R2.
Yeah. You can notice it really well in the theatrical versions of Empire, where Luke is flying to Dagobah and you see R2 there. You'll notice that he's a black R2 unit where he should be blue, and they fixed that in the subsequent releases from 97 on.
Well, very cool. Brian, I know you got to catch a plane. You're at the airport right now.
Yeah, no, I did the Incredibles 2 home video junket today.
Oh, I wish I could have been there. We have so many people out. We have someone in New Zealand. We have someone on vacation in Ireland. So I couldn't make that. But was it fun?
Yeah, no, it was really fun. I mean, anytime you get to go to Pixar and talk to Brad Bird is a good day.
Yeah. I'd like to see a Brad Bird Star Wars movie is what I want
Me
to see.
Me too.
Which almost could have happened. Anyways, yeah. Brian, where can we find more of your work online?
You can find my writings about Star Wars at Slash Film, which I'm grateful for, and sci-fi at StarWars.com. And you can listen to me talk about Star Wars just like this every week on the Full of Sith podcast.
And joining me right now is Jason from MakingStarWars.com. He actually was the one that broke this Mandalorian scoop a few months back. You know, it turned out to be legit. How's it going, Jason?
Hey, thanks for having me on, dude.
Yeah, I've been trying to get you on for a year to talk Star Wars. I love geeking out and nerding out with you about Star Wars, and your site has some of the best inside info, stuff that we can't even post, like set photos and videos. So this news broke today. I want to get your reaction. What are your thoughts on this new TV show and what we're learning about it?
Well, up front, I was just like, oh, thank you for being about Mandalore, because... because that's what I had been hearing and that's what I had reported. And then when I made it to the set, it wasn't Mandalore, I don't think. You know, so I was like, what is this? Uh-oh. But anyways, but when Favreau put out the announcement on Instagram today, I was just like, yes. Because, like, even beyond all of that stuff, the, like, Star Wars nerd or little boy in me, whatever, however you want to look at it, that sounds weird, but made me like really, really excited. I was like, yeah, they have a show called The Mandalorian. Like, that's what I would have called it, you know.
Do you think they're gonna call it Star Wars The Mandalorian, or do you think it's actually just gonna be called The Mandalorian?
You know, I don't know. It seems like when it comes to animation, like, they won't use like a colon or anything. They're like, no. Like Star Wars Rebels, like, they usually want them to sound like all extreme, and then they got rid of those episode titles on the movie, like episode 1, 2, and 3 and all that.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows? But we are kind of in a place where I think it would be kind of interesting if they did try to lose like the Star Wars logo all the time. That way things could kind of maybe breathe on their own at times, because we all know it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
We don't need to be told. So I would be okay with that. That would be cool.
Okay, so what do you think of this concept, which I know you've had time to sit with because you wrote about this months ago and probably were sitting on it for a bit. I remember talking to you at Comic-Con and you were telling me about it, and I was like, publish it, dude, publish it.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this whole concept?
Yeah, no, I love it. One of the things, when Clone Wars was coming out like 10 years ago now, which is crazy, I was sort of like, oh yeah, Clone Wars, we know about those battles. And then once they started moving into the Mandalorian stuff, I was super excited by it, not because it was, you know, a bunch of Boba Fett people, but because it was like a part of the universe we hadn't really done a lot with. And then where that left off, which I'm sure Brian Young totally caught everyone up on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what does happen to Mandalore? Like, they were in this civil war, and then we see it in Rebels, and you're like, it doesn't look too good there either. It looks like they're, you know, things aren't going so swell necessarily for like what either side would want, like the teen side that wants this peaceful Mandalore, and then these, you know, Death Watch, which Jon Favreau played the leader of. It's kind of it's such an interesting like kind of like civil war element to it. So after the Empire, like that's a fascinating time. Like the power vacuum is gone. Like, what does it mean?
And when you came out with the trimmer, I thought for sure, this is going to be the Game of Thrones set in the Star Wars universe, because there's, you know, the structures of the what do you call them? The clans in Mandalore. Kind of, it's kind of very Game of Thrones ish, but it seems like this synopsis sets it up as more of a Western. Which it seems more in line with what you've been seeing on set. We should say, for those who don't know, this TV show is filming in somewhere in Southern California. You have been observing the set from public grounds, right?
Yeah, just making sure that, you know, like they got what they need. And you guys need water or anything. Little Caesars, 10 yeah. bucks, guys. I'll hook you up.
But I've been watching your videos and seeing your set photos. It's mostly the same thing. It's like this marketplace outdoor area. I'm excited. I said this to Brian, but I'm excited that they're actually building big sets, and this isn't just like, on stage in a green screen.
Yeah, that was what surprised me, was because we had heard so much about like the pre-viz work that was going to allow this show to operate at like a movie level. And I had been hearing that this was sort of like more of George Lucas's dream, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, of where filmmaking should go. And so when I saw the actual set and they were filming somewhere, I was like, oh, well, okay. All right. Yeah. So I'm not sure how much of that is still going to be, you know, done in a airplane hangar somewhere with just blue screens and stuff like that. But the fact that we're getting, you know, at least what we have, that's rad. And what's been fascinating to me, as someone who, like, I know stuff about film, I'm not like totally film illiterate, but I'm also not a filmmaker, and so it's been kind of interesting just to watch like how modular all of these set pieces are that they have, and how they kind of like can move them around and change them. And we're not entirely 100% positive that these sets like are being moved around to become new sets, or were they just kind of like set up one way, you know, to like get them, it's like for space, because they're working on like a size of land that I would say is about the size of a Little League baseball field.
Oh, wow. So it looks bigger on your photos.
Yeah.
But they do that in a lot of movie sets. They will, if they build a huge set, I remember I was on Pacific Rim and they had this like big city set. They were able to build alleyways and certain ways to shoot it from different directions and move, you know, reset dress so that it looked like a totally new, complete set. And it seems like that's what they're probably doing here. Have you seen anything interesting on the set so far?
Well, a few years ago during Last Jedi, I had people out there in Ireland watching the filming, and they were like, yeah, there's all these guys in black and they have axes and stuff, and like we're certain it's the Knights of Ren. And it was the guys in the frog costumes, you know, from the party that was cut from the film in the end.
Yeah.
From the caretakers, the nuns and all that. And they all had their weapons, and I could see why the report went that way. So I don't want to necessarily do that today, but we did see.
I also remember that you said that there was like a fire scene or Kylo Ren attacked like a thing, and that ended up being that celebration scene that got cut because there was like this big bonfire. Yep.
And Adam Driver was there reading lines for Daisy on some of those scenes too.
Yeah.
And that just made it all like, what is going on? So anyways, we saw a very like a tall person today, and in like all black like robes and stuff like that. And they did not want to be seen. They were darting behind set pieces, you know, they were really. And so
they must know you guys are up there, right?
Oh, yeah, they definitely give us very I'm going to call them friendly looks, like, hey, Jason, I'm going to murder you in your sleep. That kind of looks. And
I'm honestly surprised that Jon Favreau doesn't like come over and just be like, you know, please no foot, you know.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if he reached out to you guys, maybe you would.
Oh yeah, no. I'm a reasonable guy. If somebody says, "Hey, what's up?" you know.
Yeah.
Then we could talk. But yeah. But anyways, we saw that and like I said, did I just see like a really creepy, you know, wizard in a black robe, or did we just see somebody that with something that was to hide their identity and who they are and what they are, you know?
Oh, that happens all the time. I mean, J.J. Yeah. Abrams has people in, you know, cloaks running from tent to tent. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I usually know what those are. Like when I see those, like I usually know that's what that is. This one was a little bit weirder, but at the same time, it didn't really scream costume to me either.
But you haven't seen any like real action go on there yet?
No, there was today. There was some pretty interesting things where, cause like, we have heard that a woman will finally be directing some Star Wars in this show. And I've been trying to confirm that and haven't been able to yet, but it was kind of interesting because when they blocked up the set today, so we couldn't see who was there, but we heard a woman yelling action. And of course that could be like a stunt coordinator. It could be an assistant, who knows, you know?
I love that you're trying to piece the puzzle together from just a limited point of view.
Right. That's how you do it, though.
It is insane though. They haven't announced, you know, who's directing this episode. And it seems like it's in production, either that, or they're doing, some like stunt rehearsals or something.
Well, they were blowing stuff. There was explosions and there was all kinds of like, you know, pops, like blinks, like from a gun and all that kind of stuff today. And, you know, we saw Favreau out there setting up shots, and we did see some tests on Friday with Favreau. And
you just think that there would be a cast list. We would have got one of these press releases from Lucasfilm that we normally do get, like, you know, in the middle of the day announcing the cast. But we really know nothing about the show other than this, what Favreau released this afternoon.
Yeah. We don't know anything. There's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of rumors about directors and that kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of it goes outside of my sphere, kind of, if you will, like when it's like Marvel Cinematic Universe directors. It's like, I know who they are. I've seen those movies, but I don't really follow it that much. So I don't even know.
Who have you heard? I know you reported that Dave Filoni might be directing two episodes. That was something you had heard, I would be so psyched for that to happen.
Yeah. And the source of that also said that he might be involved in some Star Trek stuff too.
Oh, weird.
Which is interesting. Yeah. We heard Dave Filoni. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce his name. The man who does Thor Ragnarok.
Taika Waititi?
Yes, he is, I believe that is what my source was tipping me off to in a really roundabout way today.
Huh.
I don't know.
Himself for TV, but I guess Jon Favreau is doing it too. I don't know. I guess maybe everybody wants to be in on the Star Wars action.
Yeah, it's like a childhood dream, I would imagine, for so many filmmakers that they're willing to do certain things that they wouldn't do. And from what I heard too, he was directing the last episode of the season. I've been hearing reports that there's 8 episodes and not 10, as was reported by the New York Times, I believe.
Yeah, the New York Times said 10 episodes and $100 million budget. Yeah. So you think it's 8 and probably an $80 million budget?
Yeah, I have no idea. The budgeting stuff is always beyond me. It definitely didn't look like it was going to be a cheap production based off of like how much materials they had out there.
Yeah.
Me and Randy, who does my podcast with me, was joking. He was like, how much do you think this is? Like 100,000? And I'm like, I think it's a lot more than that.
It's hard to tell. It's really hard to tell. Okay. What else do you know anything about this production that has not been reported, or that you've like snuck into? Because sometimes I see that you sneak things in to your reports.
Yeah, I do that because I don't want to own it outright all the way. I don't want to be like, so and so is directing, and then it's like not. So
yeah.
I did that with Tom Hardy too. I think I pretty much put most of it out there that yeah. I would not want you to go on your show and mess it up. You know, but it does look like, in my opinion, just really quickly, I think that it, you know, I said that the show was about the restoration of Mandalore. Yeah. That might be the bigger aim of the show. But for all we know, you know, the first season or the first part of the story, it might just be about a gunslinger and then how he ends up going on that path. So I'm not sure if we're starting kind of in a Star Wars underworld, like Solo, a Star Wars story kind of place, and then we're going to move into Mandalore. But there's so much, there's so many places they can go, and there are so many rumors that this is based off of a character from Star Wars Aftermath, which is one of the characters who gets the Boba Fett helmet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from the Sarlacc, from Jawas or something, if I remember right.
Yeah, Brian mentioned that earlier. I do want to bring up that, you know, some people are worried that, you know, the synopsis basically kind of makes it sound like this is going to be in a corner of the Star Wars universe, so it's not going to be connected to any of the films really, you know, in a big way, other than it being in the same world. And I'm wondering, you know, when Josh Trank was working on his Boba Fett film, I had heard a bunch about that, and that was a Western story. I'm wondering if this takes a basis in that, or maybe even, you know, some of the Star Wars Underworld or Star Wars 1313, which Kathleen Kennedy told me at the Force Awakens junket that they were still mining stuff from that and still planning to do stuff with all of that. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are, because, you know, Boba Fett could still be alive, theoretically. You know, you mentioned that aftermath scene with the helmet. What do you think? Do you think there is going to be any bigger connection to the Star Wars, like, characters we know?
I do. I mean, number one, there's never been a time that didn't happen. Even when they said, like, I remember you and I don't remember what it was about. Oh, it was about Darth Vader being in Rogue One. You were like, are you sure? Because they said, no Jedi, no Force powers. And I'm like, he's in it. I think he's in it.
Yeah. Well, it turns out most of that ended up being a reshoot, because he did say that on stage at the time. And it seems like they completely reworked that. But
totally.
Yeah.
But it's like,
for most people, that was their favorite part of the movie. For most people,
definitely, yeah. It's the most rewatchable part of the movie, easily.
Yeah.
It's after Jedi, so like Han, Luke, and Leia are out there, you know, having already done what they were set out to like do, and the First Order hasn't risen yet. So it's not like there's nothing to look forward to. Just that they haven't created what we need to look forward to. That's the way I'm looking at it. And it's like Boba Fett, if George Lucas's wishes are honored, he says Boba got out of the Sarlacc. He says he crawls out and he lived. And J.W. Rinsler has confirmed that a few times, I think.
Yeah. But as we know, George isn't that involved these days.
Totally. 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 But at the same time, it's like when you look at like the death of Boba Fett, it is so lame. It is so like we're just wrapping this up and moving on with our lives kind of thing. And like now, and when you look at all of the context of what they've done with the character and what they could do, like if Return of the Jedi came out this year and you and I went and saw it, we would not leave the theater going, he's dead. We'd be there's no way.
Oh, for sure. So what are the odds that we will actually see Boba Fett in this series? Like what if you had to place your bet?
My fantasy league / film Star Wars prediction is 100%.
Really? Wow. Okay.
For sure. And they even put him and his daddy in the like press release, if you will, the image saying, hey, you know about some Jango and Boba. Here's this other guy. But how is that other guy not going to be in the shadow of Boba Fett for fans? And the only way to even like ever get him out of there is to have him go up against it and prove that, you know, this new character is the real deal. And I see it going that way. Like for sure, like it would be crazy if they didn't. And that Boba Fett film I had heard was connected more to the Solo era of stuff, and Star Wars Underworld took place at that same time too. Even had stuff in that show that was like how Lando and Han meet and stuff.
Yeah.
And so we've seen that stuff's kind of like, you know, reimagined, And
but that game had like a Mandalorian origin story, right, or something like that.
1313.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was gonna. I had heard, and I don't know. I was never able to get this verified, but I heard that Boba wasn't a Mandalorian, and that was George Lucas's thing. And that story was going to eventually move into how Boba becomes like an accepted Mandalorian, like in one of the. I guess the clans now or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many kind of like opportunities for Boba to be in there, even as the villain, like how I've always wondered, how do the Mandalorians look at that guy? I mean, like, he's not a Mandalorian and he wears their armor and he goes around doing like probably bad stuff or works for people. It's like, you know, they're like, hey, that's Mandalore appropriation, bud. You can't be doing that. that doesn't belong to you. So I have to imagine like he was kind of at odds with some of them for some of the story anyway.
For sure. And one last question. You know, James Mangold was developing a Boba Fett movie, which I'm not sure if that was connected with the Just Drink project that fell apart. You know, that was before Solo kind of didn't hit expectations at the box office, I think is the nice way to put it.
Right.
And, you know, all those things are kind of, you know, being reassessed. Do you think this is involved with it? Like, do you think this is connected with that at in any way? Or do you think that's actually ever going to happen?
You know, it's like when you hear like a really good idea in Star Wars, like at Lucasfilm right now, like when something really good comes up, then you always see someone sort of taking it and then taking the same idea and doing something different with it. So I'm going to bet that there are things that have inspired things in this. Yeah. Like I don't see how it couldn't go that way. I mean, just like look at like the idea of Beckett in Solo, A Star Wars Story, who's this kind of like Treasure Island pirate who like never really made it and is like past his prime and at the end of his life. And then Hondo Ohnaka becomes that in Rebels, which is pretty much in development around the same time. So it would not surprise me if things from Underworld and like the stuff with the Pikes, there are certain elements of these stories that took place like during the Clone Wars that are kind of like specific to that political climate, if you will, for those things to align to like tell those stories.
Yeah.
But so much of it is still going to be, I think, like fair game just to be repurposed and reorganized. And I also believe that the Boba Fett movie, if marketed correctly, could be an insanely huge movie. Just personally, I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so maybe I'm missing what normal people see, but I just can't see how that concept could not really be sold like successfully. So I personally think that while it's not happening now, I don't think it's dead. I think it's still coming.
I don't know. I think they need to spend some time with these standalone movies and make it about, you know, characters that we don't know and new stories, and maybe have some of those characters, you know, characters we love that, you know, make appearances and are a big part of it. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just fear that if they made a Boba Fett movie, like the same, well, I don't know. That's what happened to Solo was an amalgam, like it was like just a combination of so many different things going wrong, so it's hard to pinpoint. But
yeah,
but I fear that like it would have the same fate at the box office in some way, that like, you know, that there maybe isn't a fan base out there that like a huge fan base for that wants a Boba Fett movie.
I think one of the things too is that they miscalculated how many women came into Star Wars with Rey and this like new stories in Rogue One, and when it goes, I've noticed online and Twitter and stuff like that, which is, you know, kind of its own echo chamber onto itself. But at the same time, like I do see like women kind of go like, nah, I don't really care about like the Han Solo thing. And they do say the same thing about like Boba Fett stuff. And so hopefully this new show kind of gives women something where they feel like, yeah, like this is for us too. This is for both of us. This is for men and women. As opposed to just being like, yeah, we're doing like a Western and Westerns are for dudes, you know, it could go that way. and if it does, you're going to have like, you know, all of the like Rey fans and all the Jyn Erso fans that have come about and, you know, and are, there's just so many new Star Wars fans. It's insane. And I love it. I think it's really great.
No, I love it too. What I think you are right though. They are overestimating how many female fans came aboard. What worries me is, you know, last time I went to, there's a Disney Store outlet,
Mm-hmm.
And it was very sad. There was this wall of Star Wars toys, and all of them were Jyn Erso, Rose, and an Cassian.
Yeah.
That was all the toys that people obviously didn't buy that were being sold. I don't know. I guess that's a bad thing to try to make an assumption based on, but like the cynical side of me is like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, you know, like with Star Wars, like just I can't keep up. Like, I don't buy stuff anymore. Like, I love it. I stopped buying the stuff unless my kids want it because it's never ending and there's always more stuff. And it's just like, you're like enough already, you know? And I don't think that like there's like you'll see like some kinds of people try to say like, oh, like there's Rose Tico, like it says that she's a bad character, and it's like, no, she's not a bad character. She's a bad action figure though.
Yeah.
I mean, my daughter loves playing with the Rey toys. She does the Rose Tico one. She's just like kind of like, what am I supposed to do with this? Doesn't have a lightsaber. Like, what do you want me to do?
I've never seen the Rey toys at that outlet. Just to, I don't know. I like Rose in the movie, so I'm not trying to push that agenda.
Oh yeah.
I think you might be right that they might have overestimated the female fan base that is going. You know, that is invested in these standalone movies. You know, I think they are invested in that saga, you know, the saga movies at this point.
Yeah. But, well, I think they're huge. There's a ton of them, but I also think that it, like, they won't just jump at everything like the guys classically would, like the guys like us who were in 1995, like they're making new action figures. I must buy them all, even though they're really buff and stupid. Like that's not them. They're smarter than us. So it's like you really gotta. They won't buy into it, anything that isn't, you know, what they want. And so I do think though, like I got faith in Favreau though. I think he's gonna do a really good job at making sure that most Star Wars fans are happy. And I think he's been a part of the Star Wars, like that Lucasfilm family, if you will, for quite some time now, and so I kind of think he knows how to deal with it, not only like as a fan but probably as a professional.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this. Jason, where can people find more of your work online?
At makingstarwars.net, and I'm Making Star Wars on all social media.